The Chinese government's crackdown on Muslim Uyghurs in Western China may be a crime against humanity. That's according to the UN. Since 2014, Beijing has been accused of singling out the ethnic minority Uyghurs for detention, re-education, and continuous high-tech surveillance. Now, the government's pretext is the threat of terrorism. In Western Xinjiang province, where the Uyghurs live, knives in restaurant kitchens are chained to counters, and passengers are video recorded in taxis. In recent days, a human rights group says Uyghur women have been forced into inter-ethnic marriages. Reporter Eva Do recently traveled to Xinjiang. She says now the crackdown has entered a new stage, an attempt to officially forget and erase evidence of the government's actions. Eva Do is a reporter with our editorial partners at The Washington Post, and she joins us. Eva, welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
So let's talk briefly about this place and its people. I reported in Xinjiang way back in 2008. It is in the far western edge of China on the old Silk Road. Totally different place from elsewhere in China. It is home to a Turkic ethnic group known as the Uyghurs. They're Muslims. But for this group, how did the crackdown from Beijing begin?
This crackdown on the Uyghurs seems to have traced back to when President Xi Jinping made a visit to the region. And while he was there, there was actually a small-scale attack in Urumqi. And then
the capital was Urumqi, the capital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that probably was egg on the face of local officials. Like, how are you controlling the security situation when something like this happens, when the president is here? And so they responded just with overwhelming force and brutality compared to the scale of the threat of terrorism in the region. And we did see, especially when a new leader for the region came in 2016, just wide-scale detentions of Uyghurs, a lot of whom had no criminal track record, who were not being accused of any crimes, but were just taken into detention on these vague suspicions of extremism. Mm-hmm.
And by some reports, up to 1 million Uyghurs detained and forced into these re-education centers?
Yes, it was a very wide-scale campaign that spanned from teenagers to people who were very elderly.
Mm-hmm. And you spent several days there recently, and you write that Chinese officials are working hard to erase this chapter in history, at least to the outside world. But for the people in Xinjiang, are the reminders unmistakable?
Yes. So what we have seen is that the U.S. sanctions have had a big effect in Xinjiang as far as the local government response, which they don't like to admit on the surface.
Right. Washington has banned imports of products, produce, solar panels, a lot of the key exports from Xinjiang.
Yeah. Since then, what we have seen is some of the visible security infrastructure has been taken down as far as checkpoints on the highways. You don't see quite as many militarized police patrolling with machine guns on the streets anymore, although there's still some of that. And so there has been some response in Xinjiang to the international criticism, but it's still a very oppressive place to be living. People are tracked very closely. And there's reminders everywhere of this re-education campaign. There's still these sort of ghostly, empty structures, just these massive buildings that had been used to detain people that are still very much just in the skyline.
And if you live there, even if it serves a different purpose now, it's still there. You walk by it every day in the course of your life. And so it reminds you, yeah?
Yeah. And also, a lot of people were transferred to prisons in the latter part of this campaign because there was international criticism that people were not having trials, that there were no official charges. And so China's response to that was to put a lot of people in prison through the court system.
Mm. As far as these re-education centers, these camps, mostly, what are they used for now?
So it seems to be a mix. Some of them are just empty. Some of them, they've been transformed to sort of regular vocational schools or teacher schools. Some of them are being used as government buildings. And actually, what I found is that quite a few of them have been changed into coronavirus quarantine centers.
So is it clear that this active campaign detaining Uyghurs, trying to brainwash them, forced labor, that this active part of the campaign is over?
Saying it's over, it's such a tricky question. So what we're able to see in sort of these one-off trips to the region is in many ways limited by what we're able to access on the ground. You know, a lot of industrial parks that I tried to go to, I was not able to get into. So you really can't confirm what's going on comprehensively across the region. We can just kind of look for clues as far as the policies that are coming out, the municipal level regulations that are being told to people, what reports we have from people in the region. And so to get a more comprehensive picture, it probably will have to wait until auditors can be there, you know, auditing factories and the labor situation on the ground.
And we know Beijing has long resisted independent auditors or the space that independent organizations have to ask questions about all this. So as you as a reporter just try to piece little pieces together of what's going on, what did the people tell you? I mean, this is one of the hardest places to speak to people, high-tech surveillance state. Uyghurs have long been intimidated. But what did they tell you about the reality now?
So one thing while reporting in a place like that is you have to be cognizant of the safety of your interviewees, that you can go there and then leave, but they can't. While talking to people, I was very cognizant of trying not to get them into trouble. And so I think the tougher questions I tended to reserve for police and local officials.
Eva, you write that often the kind of trauma that the Uyghurs have been through can be a lasting one. Did you see that when you were there?
Yeah. I think Uyghurs are understandably quite wary of how much they say to a total stranger after so many of them detained arbitrarily. I think you see that in people just being unwilling to talk about many things, which is part of this official forgetting. It's taboo to talk about this crackdown, even though it was the most all-encompassing part of everyone's life who lived there. Very few people are willing to engage in that or admit they know anything about it, even though just statistically, a very large number of them have loved ones who were caught up in this campaign, were detained and taken away.
Yeah. I guess in a way, is this mission accomplished for what Beijing has tried to do, you think?
I think from their perspective, probably, in that people are so fearful after this crackdown that it seems hard to conceive of a sort of organized revolt or rebellion to the Chinese Communist Party's rule, which was sort of the purpose of this crackdown, not just those individual people, but as a harsh warning to the population as a whole.
Yeah, and I guess we should say the evidence of widespread revolt has always been challenging or debated in the first place, whether this is a place that needed to be, as Beijing might put it, controlled or held down, right? I mean, this is Beijing's framing of the situation.
Yeah. Yes.
Eva, as you know, the Chinese government is very effective at wiping events from the public memory. I remember in my time there, we had a college intern in our office, Chinese national. She went to one of the best universities in China. She'd never heard of the Tiananmen Square killings in 1989. Mm-hmm. What does the erasure of this chapter in Xinjiang look like?
Yeah, we're seeing it happening in real time in that a few years ago, there was a lot of evidence of this detention campaign on China's internet in the form of government announcements, local news reports through official media outlets, and just a large number of those have all been erased. And so if you're a Chinese national going on China's internet, what you'd find now is very limited. And so we are seeing this kind of erasure in real time. And this is something that China has done after any of these crackdowns historically. And you mentioned Tiananmen one. It is in the historical record outside of China, but within the country, it becomes increasingly hard to sort of discern what happened with the distance of time.
And finally, just, you know, you have spent a lot of time in China and your tour has just ended. You're back in the States now. I mean, what do you take away yourself from being in Xinjiang? For my experience is just it's an entirely different reality than the whole rest of China that I saw.
For me, I think what was most striking about this trip is just how difficult it is to discern the situation broadly when the government is so tightly trying to control what people are seeing for issues like forced labor. If forced labor is going on, that's going to take much more work than a few people just going there for a week, for 2 weeks. And it's really crucial that that kind of evidence is produced.
That's Eva Do, reporter with our editorial partners at The Washington Post.